VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
We do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on VCY America. As many of you are aware of the impeachment trial that was held last week and then the acquittal that happened this past weekend. Much of the media, though, uses as a descriptor prefix for President Trump the words "twice impeached former President Trump," and then they go on to their story. We're hearing that constantly, "twice impeached former President Trump." Wouldn't it be just as accurate to say "twice acquitted former President Trump," indicating that he was not found guilty of the impeachment charges leveled against him by the House? Well, today we're going to discuss the most recent failed impeachment trial, as well as some of the aftermath of this as well. Joining us today, we have attorney Matt Staver, constitutional attorney, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Matt has argued before all levels of the court, landmark cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. He's an author, speaker on the radio broadcast Faith and Freedom and Freedom's Call. Matt, good to have you back with us today.
Good to be with you, Jim.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, she issued a statement Saturday applauding the House impeachment managers, Matt, for the job that they did in this second Senate impeachment trial of President Trump. And I quote her, saying, "Our House managers laid out a case of overwhelming and irrefutable evidence of this searing truth that Donald Trump incited a violent mob to attack the Capitol and then refused to intervene to stop the attack, even as his mob threatened to hang Mike Pence." As you know, President Trump called this whole thing a witch hunt. Matt, your response to this quote here from Nancy Pelosi and her accusations here that she's made against the president.
Other than the word Donald Trump, everything else is completely inaccurate. I mean, that's the only thing she got right. That is the president's name, Donald Trump. But everything else is completely inaccurate. To say that he incited a mob and they created violence because he's the one who incited them, and then to say that he didn't do anything to intervene, ignores the facts. First of all, his speech was away from the Capitol. The people who listened to his speech were not at the Capitol. They were in a different location. And the incursion into the Capitol, as we now know, was planned long before, going all the way back to December. We're now getting that information. So how could President Trump incite it if someone else was already planning it and he had nothing to do with that? And they've not been able, certainly, to link him to any kind of planning or discussions or a conspiracy to do so. Moreover, when he was speaking, again, the people that were listening to his speech, and you had to get into that location, and it was, you know, closed after that because of so many people there, they were in a completely different location than the Capitol. The intrusion into the Capitol building started long before he finished his speech, and so the people that were at the Capitol would not have been able to actually hear his speech. So again, they didn't even hear what he said, and yet they're the ones who began in, you know, the intrusion into the Capitol building. So you can't have any incitement, even no matter what he says. But then when you look at the actual words of what he says, he uses the word peaceful. He has no indication of inciting violence, unlike when you go look at all of the language of the Democrats, Schumer and Pelosi and so many others, where they're literally inciting violence against others last year, and those people were literally encouraging violence and attacks, including Schumer threatening two Supreme Court justices,
yes,
Kavanaugh, you know, and Gorsuch. So those kinds of allegations are completely false. And the fact of the matter is, they have zero factual evidence, let alone zero constitutional authority to proceed with impeachment and the trial.
I understand, Matt, that there was also a report that came out that the FBI knew at least a day prior that extremists were going to infiltrate the protest in D.C. I mean, if there was advance notice, how could his speech then that he gave that day have incited the breach?
Well, the FBI knew, and the FBI contacted the Capitol Police authorities, and those are under on the Senate side. side, Mitch McConnell, and on the House side, Nancy Pelosi. They offered to provide FBI agents. They were refused that. They refused that offer. The Department of Justice and other aspects of the Trump administration offered days before and the day before additional help. President Trump offered the National Guard, 10,000 troops from the National Guard. That was refused as well. This was before January 6th. So the FBI, the DOJ, and President Trump's offer of the National Guard all were refused before January 6th. We had intel, and it was fairly wide known, and because we got it from sources in Washington, D.C., and I posted it on January the 5th that there were going to be people that will be pretending to be Trump supporters, and they're supporters of Antifa or Black Lives Matter, and they're going to dress up as Trump supporters, and they're going to cause riots. So we were on high alert on January 5th before Trump said one single word, and that was well known within the agencies. And it is the Capitol Police, you know, they've resigned. The Capitol Police chiefs have resigned over this. They refused the offers of the FBI, the DOJ, and President Trump. And then whenever this incursion did occur, President Trump did respond quite rapidly to the offer of bringing the National Guard in, but he had offered to do that before January 6th.
Speaking of the National Guard, yeah, they refused then. Matt, we've still got thousands of troops in D.C.
Yeah, we still have thousands of troops in D.C. Yeah. And if you remember, Trump offered to bring the National Guard into some of these cities like Portland, mm-hmm. Seattle, and some other places, Kenosha, where all the Democratic governors refused that help, and they just continued to allow their cities to be burned and trashed.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we put up a fence around the Capitol, but no fence at the border. Matt, as we look at this further, here's another statement that House Speaker Pelosi made. She's supposed to know the Constitution. Here's what she said in her statement. Tragically, Senate Republicans who voted not to convict chose to abandon the Constitution, the country, and the American people with this vote. She made that statement afterwards. Isn't this she and the ilk of her that have abandoned the Constitution because there is no constitutional basis for them to do what they did?
Yeah, if you go to look at Article 2, the Constitution is set up primarily with three articles of the different branches of government. Article 1 is Congress, the most important branch, the longest article. Article 2 is the executive, which is the presidency, and that is shorter than Article 1. And then Article 3 is the judiciary, and it's the shortest of those three branches of government in terms of words as well, showing what they intended in terms of the importance of the various branches of government. So Article 2 deals with the president, the executive, and it begins and ends with very critical words. Article 2, Section 1, the very first sentence of Section 1 says that the president shall serve in office for a term of 4 years. So he serves in office for a term of 4 years. Article 2, Section 4, the very last sentence of Article 2, says that the president, and also has the vice president, but the president may be impeached from office, and it talks about that process, may be impeached from office, may be removed from office, I should say, by impeachment. The president may be removed from office by impeachment. So if you put Article 2, Section 1, the president serves in office for 4 years. The president may be removed from office by impeachment. That's pretty clear. While the president is serving in office, impeachment could remove that person from office. If the president is not in office, then there is no impeachment because it's only to remove once they are in office. Once they're out of office, that is a completely different deal. If you have a civil lawsuit, that's a completely different issue, but it's not impeachment. Then if you look at Article 1, Section 3, it says that whenever the president is tried in the Senate, which is what we were looking at here, that the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court shall preside. Mm-hmm. It's not may preside, possibly could preside, you can have other options, no. Whenever the president is tried by the Senate, there's only one person, and one person only, that the Constitution authorized to preside, and that is the Chief Justice of the United States. Obviously, no one else should preside, because that is the top law enforcement judicial judge in the entire country. So when it gets to the Senate, the Chief Justice rightly says, I'm not going to do that. Remember last year in 2020, he actually did preside because the president was in office. Mm-hmm. So he presided over that, and then the Senate took a vote, and they acquitted President Trump. This year, 2021, while the president is not in office, the reason why the Chief Justice said, I'm not going to preside, is because he has no authority to preside over a former president, i.e., a private citizen. So what does the Senate do? Schumer then appoints the longest-serving Democrat in the Senate, Patrick Leahy, who voted against President Trump in 2020, and now he's going to serve as the person to preside. He is a very partisan, liberal, frankly mean Democrat, and he's already indicated very strongly that he opposes President Trump, and he's opposed him before 2021. So not only does he preside, Jim, as you well know, but he also votes with the Senate to convict President Trump. How would you like, for example, the judge to be trying the case, and then when the judge gives the case to the jury, the judge leaves the bench, and the judge goes and joins the other jurors and is part of the deliberation to vote to convict you.
Outrageous. And he was not only part of that, but votes along the way. I mean, even on the calling of witnesses, he voted in favor of calling witnesses.
He did. And so, you know, and it's even worse. If you have a judge that has made personal statements against you and hates you, and you know it, no matter what you do, just because you are who you are, no matter what you allegedly do or have done, now the judge is presiding over your case. The first thing you would do is you would move to recuse him and get a different judge because there's no partiality, impartiality there. But then you have this judge that you know publicly he's been on record that he does not like you as a person. Now he's the judge, and then the judge steps off the bench and goes into the jury box. I mean, this is the stuff made of third world repressive regimes, kangaroo courts. It's not the United States of America.
Yeah. Matt Staver with us today from Liberty Counsel. And folks, rather outrageous how this was handled. I mean, Matt just laid out for us about the one who is presiding over this, Senator Leahy, who's casting votes while this trial is going on, voting against President Trump, and is supposed to have this air of neutrality about him, but also casting the final vote. He cast votes against President Trump the first during the first impeachment, a trial in which President Trump was also acquitted at that time as well. And it is rather bizarre how we can think this was anything. You know, to call this a fair trial, Matt, that would be a gross overstatement.
Well, there's nothing fair about this trial. Yeah. First of all, there's nothing constitutional about the trial. The House should never have proceeded anyway. There's no facts.
Yeah.
And they have no constitutional authority because they gave the article impeachment after the president was a private citizen.
Folks, we're going to delve a little bit further into this right after the break. Constitutional attorney Matt Staver with us from Liberty Counsel. Their website is lc.org, lc.org. Back in 1 minute here on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, geologist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how are diamonds formed?
Chris, diamonds are actually a crystalline form of carbon. It's thought that diamonds form deep inside the Earth at unimaginable temperatures and pressures. Efforts to form diamonds synthetically require these extreme conditions. But evolutionists say it took billions of years to form them. But a recent breakthrough was able to form diamonds at much lower temperatures and pressures than before, and it only took about 12 hours. The product was virtually indistinguishable from natural diamonds. The lesson we can learn from this is it doesn't take long periods of time to accomplish geologic wonders. It just takes extreme conditions. The Bible speaks of just such a high-energy environment during the great flood of Noah's day. Our Earth doesn't really look old, it looks flooded. And that's the Back to Genesis way of thinking.
Thanks, Dr. Morris. For more info on Genesis, visit us on the web at www.icr.org.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Matt Staver with us today from Liberty Counsel, and twice impeached, twice acquitted, our topic for the program today. Matt, let's get into the matter of witnesses. There were no witnesses called, were there?
No, and there were no witnesses in the House. There was no evidence in the House, and there was no opportunity for the president to defend himself. So, I mean, that's even worse. There's absolutely no due process. When you get over to the Senate, there's no witnesses there as well, and all it is oral argument. I mean, that's like putting somebody on trial and say, we're going to forego the witnesses. We're just going to forego the witnesses, and we're going to use hearsay. We're just going to come up with arguments, and we're going to try to convict this person and punish them, and that's exactly what they want to do. The reason why they went with this impeachment is not because there was any impeachable offense or because they have any constitutional authority. They hoped just to power this through and get the votes so that they could then punish the president and prohibit him from ever running for office again. And, of course, that failed. So this is the first big battle against the new Biden administration and this new control of the House and the Senate. And, frankly, we won this battle, but they should have never even gone this far. A lot more battles are coming down the pipe from this Biden administration, no doubt. And certainly we're going to have to continue to monitor those, as I know you are, and fight back.
Indeed. Representative Eric Swalwell, he was one of the impeachment managers from the House, and he was questioned by MSNBC in an interview afterwards, Matt, and I thought it was very interesting because he addressed this issue of witnesses, but he went out, you know, in my opinion, he went out of his way to be sure he insulted biblical Christianity as he did so, because he refers to God as a woman, as herself. He uses the term God herself. Let's listen to it, and then we'll have you comment here.
You know, the choice was, well, do we chase those people, not knowing what they're going to say, to the courts for years, or do we go forward with a powerful, thundering case that we have? And also knowing that Mitch McConnell was already telling us that he believed the challenge was a jurisdictional one. So we could have called God herself, and the Republicans weren't going to be willing to convict. So we're proud of the case we put forward.
Matt, your response.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just very offensive. Everything that he just said is offensive. And, you know, he has been very offensive and inaccurate through the entire time. So essentially what he says, you know, in addition to using God herself as his language, but in addition to say that they could have called God. You know, the fact of the matter is, he could care less about what the Constitution says. Mm-hmm. He acknowledges that Senator Mitch McConnell says that there's a jurisdictional question here. You know, when you go into court, the first thing that you have to ask yourself, the first thing that you plead in any case is why that court has jurisdiction. You may have a wonderful case. You may have wonderful facts. You may even think that the law is on your side. And you can put it all in the complaint. You can make it as long as you want to, but if you're not in a court that has jurisdiction of that particular issue, you get kicked out. That's the very first question. And the real question here is there jurisdiction for this impeachment? And if the answer is no, it doesn't matter anything else after that. And the answer clearly is no.
After the vote to acquit former President Trump, Mitch McConnell took to the floor. I guess Chuck Schumer spoke first, and then Mitch McConnell spoke as now the minority leader. But he had a speech. I think it was close to 20 minutes long. I'm going to air just the first 65 seconds, though, of what he had to say from the Senate floor.
January 6th was a disgrace. American citizens attacked their own government. They used terrorism to try to stop a specific piece of domestic business they did not like. Fellow Americans beat and bloodied our own police. They stormed the Senate floor. They tried to hunt down the Speaker of the House. They built a gallows and chanted about murdering the Vice President. They did this because they'd been fed wild falsehoods by the most powerful man on earth. Because he was angry, he lost an election. Former President Trump's actions preceded the riot were a disgraceful, disgraceful dereliction of duty.
Okay, Matt, this is a Senate minority leader now, talks about President Trump feeding wild falsehoods. He declared him to be a disgraceful dereliction of duty here. Your response to what Mitch McConnell had to say?
Well, there are no wild allegations of falsehoods here. I mean, there are serious allegations of election impropriety, irregularities, and fraud. And we certainly know people have already been prosecuted in multiple places around the country. Their criminal prosecution is undergoing of people who did commit election fraud, and the allegations, of course, are proceeding. But you know, this is not some make-believe situation that we just came through in 2020. There are some serious issues that need to be addressed, and it really goes to the very heart of whether or not we have a free country or whether we're going to become like Venezuela, where elections don't really matter anymore. So the president was addressing that because the American people could see for themselves. I mean, you remember election night where the polls just stopped reporting.
Yes.
When has that ever happened in our history? Why did that happen? You have to answer all these questions.
In multiple states at the same time.
In multiple states at the same time that have their own independent, supposedly, you know, election process. So we can have a whole program just on that issue alone. President Trump was addressing that. What was happening was January 6th for the vote to determine whether the electors would be certified. All of that was well known. President Trump spoke to that, but he never incited a riot. And so Mitch McConnell's words are wrong. I think they're completely off base. And you know, Mitch McConnell has been tied into China for some time. So I have no doubt that he didn't like President Trump because of his strong position against China. President Trump's the only president in our lifetime who's been willing to stand up against China. And yet, you know, McConnell's tied up to the neck with regards to China and his wife's and their family's shipbuilding process over there in China.
Mike Lindell has put together a very compelling documentary that was shot by Brannon House called Absolute Proof. And folks, it just documents, this, you know, some of the timestamps and everything involved with watching real-time impact upon the election itself. But very, very compelling in its presentation. Matt, joining all the Democrats in the Senate were Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina, Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Mitt Romney of Utah, Ben Sasse of Nebraska, Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania. Do any of those names surprise you as going along and voting with the Democrats on this?
Well, the two that do surprise me is Cassidy from Louisiana and Burr from North Carolina. And in those particular cases, here's the reason why they surprise me. They surprise me because they're in more conservative states, number one. But number two, they actually were part of the 45 senators that voted with Rand Paul's resolution that the impeachment was unconstitutional. Those two voted. It was 45, and the five that you mentioned, the ones that I would have expect, you know, Mitt Romney, Murkowski, Collins, those, you know.
Toomey and Sass.
Those were expected because they've been anti-Trumpers, never-Trumpers from day one, or almost from day one. So those were unexpected. So those or were expected. But those voted against and they wanted to go forward with the impeachment. 45 of the senators, including these two, Cassidy from Louisiana and Burr from North Carolina, voted that it was unconstitutional. How do you vote that it's unconstitutional? And you go on record as a recorded vote, and then you ultimately change your position to vote to impeach. So you've already said this is unconstitutional, but who cares? I'm going to vote to impeach anyway.
Yeah.
That tells you all you need to know about these two. Now, these two have already now been censured by the Republican parties of their respective states, and rightly so.
And what does that mean, Matt, when somebody is censured?
Well, that means that the Republican Party of that state has come out and they've reprimanded them publicly. It's very unusual. It's more of a slap on the wrist, but it's very unusual for them to do that to a sitting senator in this case. But the same thing has already happened to Liz Cheney. She got censured also in Wyoming. She is in the House, and she's been somebody who voted to impeach Trump in the House. And so what you're seeing is the Republican Party has pushed back and distanced themselves from them because the people don't support that. And I think that these people, Liz Cheney in the House, Cassidy and Burr in the Senate, they're going to be voted out of office the next time that they run for election.
Matt, it doesn't appear that this matter is over because now we have a U.S. Congressman, Representative Bernie Thompson of Mississippi, who was suing former President Trump. He's also suing his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, claiming that they conspired to incite this riot at the Capitol. The lawsuit was filed in district court in Washington, D.C. today, brought by the NAACP on behalf of Thompson. Other Democratic members of Congress right now are planning to join the litigation, but it's invoking something called the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871, claiming that Trump and Giuliani made false statements, claims that this election was stolen, and then fomented this raid that interfered with Congress's constitutional duties. It's like, how long are we going to continue this on? I mean, here now, criminal actions coming now against the former president?
Well, these particular actions is a civil suit with KKK, but they have certain penalties. Now, Joseph Sellers, the attorney for the member of Congress that is bringing this, the Democrat, has this interesting statement as part of this lawsuit. They're using what you mentioned, the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871. We'll talk about what that is in the future here in a few moments. But he says, fortunately, this hasn't been used much. He's referring to the KKK Act. This hasn't been used much, but what we see here is so unprecedented that it's really reminiscent of what gave rise to the enactment of this legislation right after the Civil War, close quote. Fortunately, he says, this 1871 law has not been used much. Well, what does that tell you? That tells you that it is only for specific reasons. Now, this particular law was passed in 1871. In response to KKK violence, and it prohibits violence or intimidation meant to prevent, these carrying out of constitutional duties. And this clearly has nothing to do with President Trump giving a speech on January 6th where people who ultimately intruded into the Capitol didn't even hear him. Didn't even hear that speech, in which he never incited or encouraged any kind of riots or violence.
Matt Staver here with us today here on Crosstalk. Matt, we're just seconds from the break, but we're going to take the break, and we're going to look at what is the long-term impact of what has transpired through the second impeachment, as well as the just where we're headed as a country. So, friends, stay with us. This is an important discussion today to observe what has taken place here even this past weekend, as President Trump has been acquitted now for a second time. And I'm convinced that if he had won election, that he would be a third impeachment would be coming against him. But we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, what is the long-term ramifications, the impact of this? So stay with us. We'll be back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
How is your marriage relationship? Do you have a spirit-filled marriage? Is your marriage one in which the lost world can look in and see Christ represented? Many of us know that we are called to have such a marriage, but fail to make it happen, perhaps due to lack of knowledge on the topic. In the booklet, What Does a Spirit-Filled Marriage Look Like?, biblical counselor Susan Heck draws principles from the book of Ephesians. She presents 13 doctrines that guide a marriage that will bring glory to God. You'll learn about humility, forgiveness, generosity, unity, and much more. You'll also learn not only to know these principles, but how to grow them in your marriage relationship. VCY is offering one copy of this booklet for a donation of $6, five copies for a donation of $24, or 10 copies for $42. Just call 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Matt Staver with us today from Liberty Counsel. Their website, lc.org. We're going to look at the long-term impact momentarily, but Matt, the attorney that was representing Donald Trump, Michael Vanderveen, admitted he has paid a high price for his successfully defending the president. I mean, talks about vandals smashing out windows at his home, the word traitor spray painted on his driveway with a big red arrow pointing at his dwelling, people marching outside his law office. Are these the same people committing these things that are so concerned about the breaching of the Capitol, but engaging in this extremism themselves?
Yeah, it is. And unfortunately, you know, the Lincoln Project, and you've seen what's happened to the Lincoln Project, is that one of their founders had to step down in disgrace because he was engaging in sexual exploitation, harassment, and solicitation of other younger men. And he has had to step down, and others are stepping down. But that particular Lincoln Project has encouraged this kind of direct assault against attorneys, I should say, targeting of attorneys and law firms, outing their clients. And so when you had President Trump originally with a law firm that represented him in Pennsylvania on the original lawsuit that he filed, the Lincoln Project ultimately targeted the attorneys, and they doxed their personal information. All that got out there, and they got so much direct harassment that the law firm had to withdraw. Now what you're seeing is anybody who represents President Trump or has represented President Trump is being, again, focused and targeted, and now you're seeing violence waged against them.
My.
I mean, this is, you think about this. We protect the right of criminals that have committed heinous crimes to get counsel, even though, you know, they make some public statement and maybe even confess. They get the right to counsel, and we pay for that because it is so critical for us to have a system that is fair, that provides due process, and that you have legal representation. And for this group, the Lincoln Project, to target attorneys and law firms, and now these people here to target this particular attorney and engage in violence against his house and threats of intimidation, that goes to the very core, Jim, of who we are.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a right to representation. You may not like the particular client that the person is representing, but that is part and parcel of the beauty and foundation of our legal system, that you have a right to your day in court and you have the right to legal representation.
Now, I perhaps haven't done, you know, extensive research on the internet, but I've not found any statement from Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi condemning this violence against the president's attorney.
No, and in fact, after January 6th, you remember the riots that took place and some of the destruction of buildings and so forth that took place in several cities after January 6th, mm-hmm. unrelated to the the vote counting or the inauguration. This is after Biden was sworn in. Not a single word from Biden, not a single word from Harris, nothing from the Democrats at all. And that was exactly the same thing that we saw in 2020. In fact, what we saw is not only no words condemning those kinds of violent activities, where people literally were killed in some of those riots, but they were encouraging them and said, well, you know, more and more people need to be standing up, and they're not going to say anything negative against them. So it is really a double standard, and, you know, you see the media that just doesn't take them to task because the media has become, you know, the enemy of the state, if you will, mm-hmm. in the sense that they're no longer fair, impartial reporters of facts and information. They've become another branch of the Democratic Party.
Twice impeached, twice acquitted. What's the long-term impact of this, Matt?
Well, I think the long-term impact of it is it sets up a system of partisanship that is unprecedented, where you can have a majority in the House that simply votes to impeach, and they put that impeachment word beside your name to try to discredit you, even though they're not going to have the votes in the House. That sets it up for terrible abuse going forward into the future. You know, the Democrats did this with regards to the filibuster. You remember they removed the filibuster under Obama because they wanted to ultimately get some federal judges on the District Court of Appeals, thinking that these would be next Supreme Court justices, and they couldn't get them by the Senate because they weren't good judges. They were activists. And so they abolished the filibuster. Well, you know what? It came back to bite them. And that's how President Trump was able to get so many judges on the bench and three justices on the Supreme Court. So this will come back, and they're not going to like, you know, they reap the wind, they're going to inherit the whirlwind, and that's what they've just done.
So, Matt, the bottom line here in all this, the million-dollar question, where are we headed as a nation?
Well, I think where we're headed is in a very difficult situation, but here's where I think is the fail-safe. There are, you know, we say 75 million people that voted for President Trump. There's literally more than that because there's people that didn't vote, that weren't of age yet to vote. There's 100-plus million people who support the values of America, and there's many people that even voted for Biden that are regretting voting for him because they didn't know, unfortunately, some of the things that he stood for. Why? They just didn't do any research. And I think that's the people. We're going to have some rough waters ahead of us, no doubt, with this administration and with the House and the Senate controlled by radicalism with the Democratic Party. But I think the people ultimately will be the firewall and the foundation that they're just not going to be able to eliminate. Their efforts to eliminate the voice of tens and tens of millions of people in this country will backfire. The people will just simply say, no, you're not going to silence me. And I think you're going to see more and more of that happening. I think you'll see alternatives to the social media platform that will arise. I think you're going to see people, and you already have, and I speak to many of them every day, that say, we're not going to be silenced. They're not going to erase me. And the more you try to suppress, the worse it's going to get. So they're not going to win. They're not going to erase tens and tens and tens of millions of people who love God and love America.
Matt Staver with us today. Our phone line is open at 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. And while you're calling, ladies and gentlemen, Matt, I know you're very concerned as to what is going to be coming and hitting us like a whirlwind here shortly. I'm talking about the likes of the Equality Act. I'm talking about the likes of something known as H.R. 1.
Yeah, H.R. 1 is putting into law all of the fraudulent actions and known fraudulent actions that make elections vulnerable. You know, we knew before November 3 that the most vulnerable area of elections outside of computer systems is the mail-in ballots, and we knew that for many years. Even Jimmy Carter, on a task force that he co-chaired, came out and said there has to be reform because this is fraught with fraudulent problems. And they're wanting to put in law all of the fraudulent aspects and make elections so that they are more susceptible to fraud. So we're going to have to really oppose H.R. 1 coming out of the House. And then also the Equality Act. That is the most radical bill. It passed the House before in the previous Congress, and it was always stopped in the Senate. But the vote in the Senate is very close. I think in many of these situations, our fail-safe, even though there's not a majority in the Senate, I think one of our areas to be able to block some of these things is in the Senate. Look, the first battle that we just encountered is this impeachment, and we won that. And we won it where? In the Senate. And I think a lot of these things can be also targeted in the Senate to stop this Biden administration. There's also lawsuits that have already been successful against this administration. Biden has the world record for being the quickest out of the block after the swearing-in ceremony to actually have a federal court rule against him within a week.
Matt, and I think bottom line to all of that, and to borrow the title of a book, I know, written Eternal Vigilance, that
right.
You had authored. Yeah,
yeah. Eternal Vigilance is the price of freedom, and we have to be eternally vigilant. I know that there are also other areas on the state level. The Republicans have 27 states. There's trifectas galore, meaning the Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the executive branch in these majority states. And these attorneys general, Republican attorneys general, conservative leadership in these various states are pushing back. They're saying no. South Dakota is saying, you're not going to bully us and push us around and take our states' rights. Texas is doing the same thing. Many more are coming on board to do that as well.
Folks,
in fact, there's a bunch of coordination, I think, by these states, and there's going to be even more work to push against this overreach.
And folks, you got to be involved. You got to know what's happening within your state. For instance, Wisconsin today has a state primary as it relates to superintendent of public instruction and some other offices as well. I just learned that, was it last night or just in recent days, the city of Wausau committee passed a so-called ban on conversion therapy that's going to advance to the full Common Council in the city of Wausau, Wisconsin, of which several listeners are here. Folks, you've got to stay engaged as to what's happening in your local government. Let's go to Doug in Pensacola, Florida. Doug, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I remember watching the returns come in on the election night, and when a number of states stopped counting, I told my wife, I said, it's over, we can go to bed, Trump has lost. Because we could see what was happening. My question is, how do we fight the corruption and preventing another fraudulent election like we saw back in November? I'm really not optimistic. I understand God's in control, and I got that. But, you know, what more can we do?
Thank you.
My
Thank you,
question.
Doug.
Well, what we're doing, and we're working with a lot of different legislators and other organizations around the country to focus on the state level. And there's a number, there are a lot of different pieces of legislation that will be filed and have been filed by various states to push back against this and reform the system within the states. For example, there's a large number of proposed bills filed in the states to push back against these overreaching governor executive orders that we've seen happen through COVID.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing is happening also with this election. So I think there's going to be movement in those states. And if you realize, you know, some of these states where you had a Democratic governor, like Pennsylvania, you have a Republican-controlled House and Senate there. So even in Pennsylvania, there's opportunity to be able to move forward and implement reform.
Yeah, it's got to happen at the state level. Thank you, Doug. Let's go to Paul in Brookfield. You're on the air, Paul.
Thanks for taking my call, Jim, and good afternoon, Counselor. I just retired last year with 30 years of experience in law enforcement, and after seeing them turn the Capitol Police into scapegoats,
yeah.
Keeping in contact with a lot of Midwest officers, they've expressed that with all the new training, with all the new use of force guidelines, and all the new department policies, one of the officers said something that just struck me, and I'm wondering what the counselor would think of this. His comment was, at this point, we're now in a race to the bottom.
A race to the bottom.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I'm not exactly sure what he was thinking about in that, but, you know, we have a very good relationship with the Capitol Hill police officers and law enforcement. In fact, through one of our ministries, Faith and Liberty, we have an annual award for the law enforcement, and we always work with these various individuals. Some of them made, at the very top, some decisions that they ultimately had to step down for. We'll pick it up after
yeah,
the break.
Yeah, we'll have some more comments right after the break. Thank you, Paul. Back in 60 seconds, Matt Staver from Liberty Council, their website, lc.org. Back in 1 minute.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. For 30 years, I've been researching the topic of brainwashing. For the past 2 years, I have been in production for a brand new docu-movie entitled Brainwashed America. We've made a big decision here, and that is to release it online for free. If you go to brainwashedthemovie.com, that's brainwashedthemovie.com, you can watch the first 2 hours absolutely free of charge. Part 2 will come out May 1st, Communist Day, May Day. Many Americans ask me all the time, what can we do? As you'll see in this documentary, Ronald Reagan, he narrated a black and white documentary back in the 1950s. And he and many others agreed that the ultimate weapon of the communist was brainwashing, disinformation. And the greatest way to fight it is with truth. Use this documentary to open the minds of Americans. This is your chance. BrainwashedTheMovie.com.
Constitutional attorney Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel with us today. And Matt, we had a retired officer there just talking about a race to the bottom. And, you know, I even interpret that. Look what we're doing to our police. We're pulling out from them anything that they have to enforce the law and told to stand down. We are seeing, you know, city councils that are decimating their police departments, saying we need to reimagine our police force. And just totally decimating law enforcement itself. We see these CHOP districts and others that were set up, and it has just been a real slap in the face to those who are there for true, honest law enforcement to uphold the laws and uphold the Constitution.
Yeah, and you know, going back to the Capitol Police as an example, I mean, I have friends that serve on the Capitol Police Force, and so they put their lives on the line every day, and we are very strongly supportive of our law enforcement. In fact, Jessica, my assistant, her husband is a deputy in law enforcement, and so what we have done is we have handcuffed and we have demonized the law enforcement, and that has certainly happened during the Obama administration, and certainly in the last 2 years with the Democrats in 2019-2020, it escalated to a higher level, such that law enforcement were targeted. I think, you know, when you go back to when I said these offers were rejected, you have to understand these on the Senate, the chief of the police force on the Senate side and the chief on the House side, who do they answer to? Well, they have someone over them. On the House, it's Nancy Pelosi, and on the Senate, it's Mitch McConnell. Now, we don't have any evidence that they're the ones who made that final call.
No,
but it very well could have been.
But at that particular time, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Let's get to another call here. Dawn in Milwaukee, you're on the air.
Thank you. I have a comment and a prayer request. When in thinking in terms about President Trump's second impeachment trial, they had to do this to him because he is really the legitimate president due to the vote. And the lawsuits against Trump and Giuliani, this is what should happen. They should turn it around to present the voter fraud case. And I understand that Brandon House has sent a CD copy of absolute proof to everyone in the House and the Senate. Mm. So now, if we as a people and a nation can begin to pray that the truth will come out, I don't know what maybe God will move.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly we have to keep on praying. And, you know, you remember the Exodus and you remember Esther in Persia, and they were impossible odds, and yet God intervened, and he intervened because people prayed.
Yeah. Amen. Thank you for your call, Dawn. Ralph in Mesa, Arizona, you're on the air.
Yeah. This is Ralph. Thanks for calling, or letting me call. In 1936, according to a documentary DVDs, a historian by David Barton, the Democrats formed the KKK in 1936. So why are they accusing President Trump of being a racist?
Hmm. Well, good question. I mean, the Republican Party began because the Democratic Party was absorbed in support of the KKK, and that was the whole point of the Republican Party. That was why Lincoln was an abolitionist. He was part of the Republican Party. And, you know, you go back and you look at history, it's pretty clear who was the racist party and which one actually pushed for, you know, racial equality. And it's the Republicans that push for racial equality, and the Democrats have had a long history of supporting the KKK, including, you know, the Senator Byrd out of West Virginia. He's gone now, but he is somebody that, you know, Hillary Clinton and others, they looked up to, they admired him, and yet he was a member of or supportive of the KKK.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thank you, Ralph, for raising that. Mark and Monroe, you're on the air.
Yes. I see Donald Trump as being up 2-0 in the diabolical left. Liberal left is 0-2 in these bogus impeachments. The Pelosi's, Schiff's, and Chuckie Schumer's are the ones getting off scot-free, especially when somebody like Schumer can get off scot-free threatening the Supreme Court judges. Mm. You mentioned this earlier.
Yeah, right.
And there's no pushback on that. I mean, obviously you have two tiers of justice here. My bottom line is this is nothing more than hypocrisy, hypocrisy, hypocrisy. And my bottom line is the Lord said himself, and I know this was in regard to the Pharisees, but in principle he said, woe to you hypocrites.
I agree.
Thank you for that, Mark. And the same term of fight that President Trump used, politically speaking, has been used by virtually every other politician in the process there, and we could play a barrage of clips along that regard. I'm going to squeeze one last call in today. This is Lori in Michigan. Hi, Lori, you're on the air.
Hi. A friend and I were praying right before the vote there, the impeachment. We were praying. We prayed a prayer. We said, Lord, bless the one who blessed Israel. And you know what the other part is.
Yeah.
And we prayed earnestly for that, and she saw me yesterday or the day before, I think it was yesterday, she said, God answered our prayers. And, you know, I think if we continue to pray for God's protection over him based on that, bless those who bless Israel, and then do as you know that, you know, as God does to those who curse Israel. And so I think that, I think it's a really powerful prayer. Another thing I just want to mention, I thank you, Jim, for mentioning Absolute Proof. And my friends and family and everybody have been calling and saying, wow. And then, you know, on WVW.com. And I just wanted to say real quick that it's a reconciliation, even though it gives us information that is pretty shocking about America and what happened. It's a reconciliation. You see a peaceful attitude. You see people that want to do nonviolence, totally peaceful response to what I call an eye-opener,
sure.
A huge eye-opener,
sure.
And to what happened to. So I just have to say that in the midst of all the trouble, you see that these people that want freedom in our country, they don't have a heart of hostility,
no, they don't.
Anger, violence. It's not there.
Thank you.
I think you're going to see that more and more. And, you know, certainly President Trump has blessed Israel more than any other president in history since Israel became a nation in our modern time of 1948. No question about it. No comparison. And when President Trump decides to go out and make his first speech somewhere, you can better believe that in 24 hours he'll pack the largest football or soccer stadium in the country.
Yeah.
You haven't seen anything yet.
Wow. Thank you, Lori, for the call. Matt Staver from Liberty Council. LC.org is a website. Matt, as always, thank you for your time here today and giving us some analysis of what we see unfolding before our eyes here.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
And folks, continue to stay informed on these critical issues, and by all means, continue in prayer for our nation and its leaders. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.